Case this morning, U.S. versus Stallworth. Gutierrez.
Thank you. May it please the court, Gerardo Gutierrez on behalf of the defendant appellant Archie Stallworth. I raised a various number of issues here, but I think I'm going to focus on a couple of them, and that is the failure of the court to grant the entrapment defense and the actual sufficiency of the possession in this case, or rather the attempted possession. As you know, in my arguments, I have outlined what I feel is the basis of a bright line test that just wasn't followed by the court in abusing his discretion in granting the entrapment defense. And that bright line rule, I believe, talks about the granting of, or rather distinguishing, the case between the unwary innocent and the unwary criminal. I think that in the line of cases, especially after Navarro, that this court has looked to what the underlying basis of the initial investigation, the initial contact with law enforcement. In the line of cases that are described here under Navarro, the court tends to look at what the law enforcement was trying to achieve, why they had created this net of inducement in the first place, to see what the problem was. Was it a problem that there was, as the appellee's brief suggests, corruption? There's a one-line statement that they were investigating corruption. But really, the case was brought before or to the attention of the FBI based upon the pepper spraying of a sleeping patron at a local strip bar. We submit that the pepper spraying of a sleeping patron in and of itself does not rise to the level of corruption that would merit the FBI to set up an inducement whereby they target a 12-year police veteran with the type of criminal inducement that they are claiming was meritorious in this case.
But let me ask you a question, because I guess you are criticizing the random incident, if you will, that brought Mr. Stallworth to the attention of the undercover agent. Suppose the undercover agent instead just hung out at a restaurant near the police headquarters where officers go eat lunch and just kind of kept his ears open or said hi to people and randomly tried to kind of feel out who might be amenable to this kind of extra work and who wasn't. Is there anything wrong with that?
Well,
sit down and chat with people over a sandwich.
That's correct. And I believe that scenario would have to have some type of evidence, some type of proof by an agent who would have testified, you know, I was sitting over at Harry's Cafe one day when I overheard a group of Harvey law enforcement officers talk amongst themselves about either distributing cocaine, buying cocaine, brokering cocaine.
Okay, so I get that. I mean, that part is the easy case. But suppose Carlos, as we'll call him, sees a guy who's eating a sandwich by himself and says, can I join you? And sits down and strikes up a conversation in which he, similarly to the one with Mr. Stallworth, realizes that maybe there's somebody who's open to this. You think that's off-limits?
Well, Judge, you know, it is an analysis that requires a certain amount of weighing of the negatives versus the positives. If the police officer, or strike that, if the FBI has reason to believe that at a particular place, officers typically hang out to discuss cocaine or drug transactions, then there's a suspicion that perhaps, as I pointed out, the difficulty in penetrating a gang of rogue police officers is quite substantial.
But where's your authority for the idea that that initial conversation has to have what, striking me, is almost hairy reasonable suspicion to
We have to go back to the Sherman versus United States case that the Supreme Court decided back in 1958. And that said that the government's characterization of a defendant's hesitancy to the agent's request is the natural weariness of the criminal cannot fill the evidentiary void. In other words, we can imagine all kinds of scenarios whereby the attention is drawn to law enforcement about people who go out and do these kinds of crimes. And we're not just talking about people here. We're talking about law enforcement officers. So that the question then arises, at what level of that overhear, of that contact, is required? It may be, Judge, that that all he has to do is overhear over a cup of coffee. But in this case,
you don't think he can elicit the conversation. He can't just sit down and draw the officer into conversation and get the sense that this person may be open to an illegal deal.
Well, under your hypothetical, Judge, that would be perhaps a colorable area. And I'm not saying it's not. But in this case, you recall that the first conversation, the chatter over, if you will, a cup of coffee, even though it occurred at his job at the metro station, the conversation was something like, oh, you know, I have a bodyguard detail. And this bodyguard detail, you're just going to watch me and look around to see what's going on. So it began with the suggestion that this was a routine bodyguard.
Right, and I guess that's what concerned me about your attack on the entrapment defense, because so far so good. I mean, you know, maybe you could be, you know, just working in a bad neighborhood or something. You want somebody washing your back, and you're just making a delivery of packages, legitimate, you know, gifts to somebody or something. But then we get a little further along, and Stallworth starts saying things like, I don't want to know what's in the bags, and if you're going to do this kind of thing, don't do it at a fast food place, do it in the train station. You know, Stallworth knows what's going on. He's not saying, you know, get out of here, and I'm on top of that, I'm going to bring you in, you know, for suggesting this.
Right, but because of, and as I pointed out in my brief, because of the fact that it was this ongoing nebulous cat and mouse game, right, and this is and he's being targeted over this cup of coffee, as you suggest, because it's this nebulous, ongoing thing. What we have here is that the very next one, right, the very next one, he's inducing a police officer to follow him along in what appears to be a crime, and when you're asking a police officer to follow along in what appears to be a crime, doesn't that leave open the possibility that the police officer just might well be doing a job that he's trained to be doing? I mean, when you're talking about entrapment of a police officer, you're saying to that person, listen, we know from the beginning you never had any intention whatsoever to do your job. Well, where is that? I mean, where is that in the record that there was some indication, like I said, other than pepper spraying a sleeping police officer, that they admit that that's how they came to the attention? Now,
how about the $1,000 bribe?
The $1,000 bribe?
Doesn't that change the situation? He was offered money in exchange for providing security on this cocaine deal.
Well, I don't believe that you can characterize that as a $1,000 bribe, but you can characterize it as a $1,000 payment. Now, here's the difference. The difference is that a bribe under an official capacity is different than taking money for what amounts to be a cocaine deal. Now, if you take money for what amounts to be a cocaine deal, then that could be that you're doing it for profit.
So he wasn't being bribed to look the other way. He was being paid to participate.
That's correct. But on the other hand, it could also be money taken by a police officer in exchange for the regular course of the investigation.
But he put that money in the record.
I'm sorry.
I just couldn't find any evidence in the record that he was in this double agent role trying to investigate Carlos. I mean, no reports, no authorization, no nothing.
Well, the fact is that he and Sneed had filed, well, that Sneed had filed a police report, and that immediately after the August 11th transaction at the airport, Sneed and Stallworth had a conversation. And that conversation had to do with the investigation, the report that had been filed. That was a conversation that two police officers, who are admittedly way over their heads in this, and there's no question about it. I mean, the government made a big deal about how routine police procedures were not followed. But, you know, we cannot substitute the FBI's routine police investigation policies and procedures with the Harvey Police Department police procedures. And as you could read in the record, I mean, the record is replete with instances where the Harvey hierarchy, if you will, had no idea what was going on. They didn't even know who was in charge of their TAC unit. They didn't know who was in charge, if Archie Stallworth had ever even been a TAC officer. So,
so we know Harvey is a place that has its problems. I mean, that's clear. But what about, though, Stallworth's statement to the FBI agents that he messed up?
Judge, many times people who are victims of corruption themselves feel guilty. So if the FBI came to me and said, Mr. Gutierrez, we believe you're corrupt, you didn't defend this client properly, you took an excessive fee here, and I look at the facts and on the naked facts, I'm saying, oh God, I'm sorry, you know, I took too much money on that case. There's a lot of reasons why people feel guilty. Victims feel guilty all the time. So to look at an ex post analysis and just focus in on what happened afterwards before deciding to target Mr. Stallworth, I think it's a line of cases that the Seventh Circuit will have to review if it decides not to overturn this case, because the Navarro case is now being called down to the fourth level, and not even to the fourth factor, which is predisposition, but predisposition, that means really post-disposition. It really means post-inducement. So if this court allows this case to stand, it would have to reevaluate all its cases after Navarro. Because Navarro said, really, all the cases, all the weight, all the elements of the five tests are important, but you should really look at the fourth one. And here, Judge Grady took that to mean that really, that's all we need to look at is how quickly he hesitated, or how quickly, if at all, he hesitated. Granted, in this case, he didn't hesitate that long. But is the hesitancy devoid of any other fact is going to carry the day? Are we going to say now that the entrapment defense cannot be given when the hesitancy factor is not there? No, we have to look at the whole picture. And I recall from my early days in law and economics, whatever little I took of that, that says, you know, we have to look at this in terms of what the harm to society is, what available law enforcement methods are there, and what is the overarching need to target an individual that they don't know what he's going to do. There was no evidence that they knew up front that either it was the innocent Archie Stallworth or the criminal Archie Stallworth. And I submit, in either case, Archie Stallworth could have fallen. Whether he was innocent or he was criminal prior predisposition intent, the way this was structured in either case, we don't know. And when we don't know something, when something is in the gray area, then that's for the jury to decide. Why would Judge Grady say no? No entrapment defense. I mean, that's the issue. Granted, I did say that, you know, this wrote to outrageous government conduct and that this court has never, you know, dealt with that issue before, but I think that this is a case.
We dealt with it, but we
I mean, you never dealt with it the way I see it, but that's a little different. But still, I mean, Navarro, here, let me quote from Navarro, because it's a good decision, I think.
Navarro says a line must be drawn between the unwary innocent and the unwary criminal. Entrapment defense focuses upon whether the government's actions implanted the criminal design in the mind of an otherwise unpredisposed person. So, how do we get to the unpredisposed person if we can't look ex ante? I don't think we can. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. DeVoot.
May it please the court. My name is Andrew DeVoot, and I represent the United States. The defendant in this case agreed to participate in a transaction involving multiple kilos of cocaine. He then participated in a transaction involving multiple kilos of cocaine. And when confronted by the FBI with evidence of his participation, he falsified police reports to try to suggest he'd been conducting his own investigation. I'd like to focus today on what defense counsel has discussed this morning, and that is the entrapment defense. This court's analysis of the entrapment defense and whether or not a defendant is entitled to the entrapment defense is well established. This court has said to look at predisposition and inducement. And if a defendant is predisposed, we don't get to inducement, and the defendant is not entitled to the instruction. This court has further given us five factors to look at in determining whether or not there is predisposition. And this court has told us in multiple cases that the most important factor is reluctance. The defendant is right. Reluctance is not the only factor. There are five factors, but this court has highlighted that reluctance is the most important factor. And in this case,
you didn't have any evidence that prior to the development of this relationship by the undercover agent that Stallworth had been engaged in corrupt or drug dealing or other kinds of criminal actions.
There was no evidence in the record at trial, Your Honor, regarding that fact. That's correct.
Okay. So I think what Mr. Gutierrez is trying to stress is, you know, again, you've got to start somewhere, and what we don't want the government to do is to take somebody who's a normal citizen and persuade them to commit a crime, right? I mean, that's maybe they'll commit the crime, but if that's how it happened, then that's where the entrapment defense comes in. And so I guess the question is, since as far as I know, it's not illegal in almost all places for police officers to moonlight. I mean, they can work as bar security guards or they can do special assignments. There's nothing initially wrong with that first $300 transaction, right?
Well,
he just gets paid $300, he sits there in the car. I didn't pick up any sense that there was anything suggesting drugs or other illegal activity for that one.
Well, that's right, Your Honor. Except when Carlos, undercover agent Carlos, gets back in the car, he starts talking about the defendant starts talking about running license plate numbers and conducting activity consistent with surveillance. But that's correct. There's nothing explicitly illegal in that context, and it's a good point. And I think that the standard that this court has designed, however, addresses that concern, Your Honor. This is one of their five factors. One of those factors is the background of the defendant. One of the factors is whether the government introduced this idea of this activity. Whether the defendant...
It looks like the government did introduce the idea on this record. I mean, again, I don't want to go beyond what's in the record because that's not right. So the government introduces the idea. The first thing looks like just, you know, a special job, and it's legal to get the $300 for it.
Well, Your Honor, but the really critical moment, and again, going to the fourth component, the reluctance, is there's no reluctance whatsoever in this case. As Carlos said on his redirect examination at trial, he literally finished his sentence raising the idea, and the defendant was acknowledging his unwillingness and agreement to participate, Your Honor. And then there are other factors as well. For example, the third factor, participating for profit. As Your Honor stated, he earned $1,000. He was asked if $1,000 was cool, and he said, yeah, I'm good with that. And the fifth factor, Your Honor, is was there any inducement, the nature of the government's inducement? There was no coercion here. This was an invitation to participate, and he accepted that invitation. And counsel concedes in the brief that there was no reluctance and pivots to the argument that the reason there was no reluctance is because he was conducting his own investigation. And the evidence at trial absolutely dismantled that theory. And so you have these three factors, three of the five factors, In fact, the first factor on background, there was no affirmative evidence provided by the defendant. We all know from other components of the proceedings that he was a 12-year veteran and whatnot. I'd also, Your Honor, just since the defendant raised it, the pepper spraying incident, again, that was not focused on at trial, but it's in, on pages 2 and 7 of the government's version, which is attached to the PSR. And as AUSA Perry reiterated at the sentencing on pages 44 and 45, the defendant was not asked to pepper spray this individual by people at the skybox. On his own volition, he pepper sprayed this man twice in the face. When the defendant, when that individual stumbled outside and accidentally bumped into the police car, he pepper sprayed him three more times.
So why is that relevant to anything? I guess I'll ask you the same question I asked Mr. Gutierrez. Does it matter how this particular police officer came to the attention of the undercover FBI agent, Carlos? I mean, happened to deal with pepper spray. But is there some notion that people who pepper spray a lot, you know, are particularly likely to want to do drugs or what?
Well, Your Honor, no. But the way everything transpired was, I mean, this defendant came to Carlos in the sense that Carlos was posing as the general manager of the skybox, and I was going to finish in explaining that. When the management of the skybox asked this individual to stop, he threatened them that the Harvey Police Department would no longer answer police calls from the skybox. So there's more to it than a simple pepper spray. It's these notions of essentially threatening the suggestion of the police not providing services. So Carlos went down to the station as the general manager of the skybox to talk with him about this incident and then also raise the notion of security. But I really want to focus on, within the confines of the five points in the standard, with this reluctance, no inducement that the defendant profited for this criminal activity, that, Your Honor, there was no evidence in this case justifying an entrapment defense. And I think to your ultimate question, I don't think there is. I think that the standard encompasses and evaluates in each instance how the government approaches someone. So I don't think that there is a bright line rule that can be said, this way is okay, this way isn't. I think that these factors allow the court to analyze each instance. And in this instance, even if the brutal nature of the pepper spraying wasn't illegal in terms of drug activity, when you look at the other factors of this analysis and the evidence presented at trial with no reluctance, no inducement whatsoever, and profiting criminally, the district court was well within its discretion to deny the entrapment instruction. If there are any further questions from the court, I'd be happy to entertain them.
I don't believe so. Thank you.
Well, the government would request that you affirm the jury's verdict. Thank you.
Thank you. You were out of time, but I'll give you another minute.
I just wanted to point out something, and that is that the government suggests, and this I think, and they're correct. And it boils down to this, whether we want a bright line test or not. I mean, if it comes down to, well, it's okay to target a pepper spraying officer, but it's not okay to target an officer that didn't pepper spray, or it's okay to target an individual who you suspect is not in keeping with the guidelines for monitoring his behavior or other patrons' behaviors at nightclubs, then that's fine. But like I said earlier, I think that the entire scope of the entrapment defense, it's kind of an anomaly. It's a truly American defense. And if there's any issue about predisposition, if there's any doubt of whether the nexus between pepper spraying and bad law enforcement could rise to that level, then I think that was an issue for the jury to decide. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gutierrez. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we'll move to...